Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with some breaking news out of Washington, D.C. Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has indicted 13 Russians on charges of conspiracy to commit fraud against the United States by interfering with the U.S. elections to elect Donald Trump to the White House. The indictment documents a damning pattern that includes creating false identities, using social media posts, and even organizing events to sway voters in the presidential election. A second federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration from deporting Dreamers, or young immigrants brought to the U.S. as children, and we'll have details. Also on our Capitol Report, hear details about Trump's proposed budget and how it could affect your bottom line, as well as how it stacks up to his campaign promises. We'll also tell you about Politico's explosive investigative report on Congressman Duncan Hunter, including allegations that the federal criminal probe into his campaign finances is now focusing on his wife, and that federal prosecutors are reportedly questioning a woman reputed to be Hunter's mistress, allegations that he dismisses as tabloid trash. Topping our local news, hear why the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District Board is reconsidering its decision to remain the only independent all-volunteer fire department in the county. Learn about a community garden coming to Lemon Grove. And hear about the passing of a prominent East County physician long associated with Grossmont Hospital and a former president of the Grossmont Healthcare District Board. Find out why this year's wildflower blooms in the Anza Borrego Desert may be a bust. Then on Destination East County, hear about some festive events coming up across our inland region this week, including President's Day weekend activities at Lake Jennings, a Celtic harp concert, and a star party at Mission Trails, a jazz concert in La Mesa, Seussical the Musical in Spring Valley, and hawk watching in Ramona. Plus, hear about more upcoming events in March and April, from a St. Patrick's Day run through El Cajon to egg hunts, a harmonica fest, and a spring extravaganza. Liz Alper will recap some big wins for local athletes in the Winter Olympics on her sports report, including snowboarder Sean White and pair skaters Chris and Alexa Knierim. On Crime Beat, hear about a suspect wanted for an attempted kidnapping in Warner Springs that injured a woman, a flasher at Parkway Plaza, and a hit-and-run motorist sought for killing a pedestrian in El Cajon. On Ready, Set, Grow, Connie Beck will tell you how to attract hummingbirds and butterflies to your garden this spring. And on Green Scene, learn how one local farm in Warner Springs has become the first wildlife-friendly certified farm in our region. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. It's now official. Russia actively worked to sabotage American democracy and put Donald Trump in the White House. On Friday, Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller released copies of indictments filed against 13 Russians and three Russian entities on charges of conspiracy to defraud the United States and other charges, ranging from bank fraud to identity theft, in their quest to violate laws that prohibit foreigners from spending money to influence U.S. elections. The indictment language is damning. It documents how the Russian organization Internet Research Agency, which employed 12 of the 13 indicted Russians, plotted information warfare against the U.S., paid for in Russian rubles worth $1.25 million. Russians posing as Americans used social media to post positive information on Trump and negative information, much of it false, disparaging other candidates opposing Trump, including Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Hillary Clinton. They also organized pro-Trump and anti-Clinton marches and rallies in the U.S. They were aided by at least 100 U.S. citizens and communicated with members of the Trump campaign, the indictment makes clear, as well as funneling illegal contributions into electing Trump. The Russian operation began in 2014, shortly after Trump visited Russia for the Miss World competition, and by 2016 had narrowed its focus to blatantly supporting Trump and disparaging his general election rival, Hillary Clinton. The Russian operatives formed fake organizations to deceive U.S. voters. with names such as Army of Jesus, Secured Borders, and Blacktivist, the indictment state. They promoted a March for Trump and Down with Hillary rallies. They created Twitter hashtags such as Hillary for Prison and Facebook groups such as Trumpsters United, posting messages on social media. For example, We Cannot Trust Hillary to Take Care of Our Veterans. These operatives visited at least 8 states, including California, and were advised by an unnamed American in Texas to focus their efforts on battleground states such as Florida, Colorado, and Virginia. They also actively worked to suppress minority turnout, the investigation revealed. And they destroyed evidence to impede the investigation, the indictment states. They also stole identities of Americans to set up false identities and bank accounts to fund their illegal operations. The indictment papers reveal that Mueller has cut a deal with one person on identity theft charges, likely to obtain information and testimony against other conspirators. No Russians have been arrested, and those charged may be overseas. But being wanted by the U.S. government will make it difficult for them to travel or conduct international business, the New York Times reports. The recent indictments add fuel to the Mueller investigation into ties between Russia and the Trump campaign. Previous indictments and guilty pleas have included Trump campaign and Trump administration officials. Trump, however, tweeted on the Russia indictments, "My campaign did nothing wrong, no collusion." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Two federal judges have issued rulings to temporarily protect young immigrants known as Dreamers, who are registered with the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program. U.S. District Judge Nicholas Garofas in New York, in a decision in mid-February, blocked the Trump administration from rescinding the DACA program as cases challenging it remains on appeal in the court system. In his decision, Judge Garofas ordered the federal government to continue processing both new DACA applications and DACA renewal requests without any changes to the terms or conditions of the program created during the Obama administration. In January, U.S. District Judge William Alsup issued a similar decision in California, ordering Trump administration officials to continue processing DACA applications. The New York ruling is similar to one issued last month by San Francisco-based U.S. District Judge William Alsup, who ordered the administration to continue processing DACA applications. President Donald Trump issued an executive order last year to end DACA, but gave Congress 6 months to enact legislation to protect DACA recipients. That six-month window ends on March 5th, and thus far, Congress has failed to act due to opposition from most Republicans to protecting young people who came to America as children of undocumented immigrants. That six-month window ends on March 5th, and thus far, Congress has failed to act due to opposition from most Republicans to protecting young people who came to America as children of undocumented immigrants. The dual court decisions grant a reprieve from deportation to these young immigrants for now, though that could change if the U.S. Supreme Court decides to hear an appeal filed by the Trump administration. The High Court has not yet said whether it will hear the appeal or let the lower court decision stand. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Capitol Report. On the campaign trail, Donald Trump promised to reduce the federal deficit and to protect those he called the forgotten men and women of our country. Specifically, he pledged not to cut Medicare, Medicaid, and other programs that benefit middle-class families and the poor. Those promises now appear false, given what's in the president's budget plan released on Monday. Trump's $4 trillion proposed budget would increase the nation's deficit by over $1 trillion. It would increase military spending by over 14%, with military spending accounting for 59% of the entire federal budget, while cutting funds for nearly every other domestic program. That includes huge cuts to Medicare and Medicaid, which benefit one-third of all Americans, the New York Times editorial board reports. How deep are the cuts? Health and Human Services stands to lose over one-fifth of its funding. Medicaid would lose hundreds of billions of dollars. The National Institute of Health would lose nearly a sixth of its funding, including deep cuts to programs ranging from control of infectious diseases to cancer research to programs that protect Americans from heart attacks, strokes, and diabetes. The extreme budget proposal would even cut by 26% funds for the Center for Disease Control's Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities at a time when Zika virus, which causes serious brain damage to unborn children, has made its way to the U.S. Former Centers for Disease Control Director Tom Frieden called Trump's budget unsafe on Twitter, stating that it would increase illness, death, risks to Americans, and healthcare costs. President of the American Heart Association, Stephen Hauser, calls the cuts unconscionable. Even Meals on Wheels faces cuts to the program that provides hot meals to homebound seniors. Almost one-third of the Environmental Protection Agency's budget would be gone. The EPA enforces our nation's clean air and water laws, among other crucial functions. The EPA has long been a target of pollution-producing industries and developers. The Department of Education's budget would be chopped by 10%. The State Department, which aims to resolve international conflicts through diplomacy rather than war, faces cuts of nearly 27%. The National Science Foundation, which funds scientific research projects nationwide, would have its budget trimmed by 11%. The Food and Drug Administration, which is in charge of protecting consumers from unsafe food or medications, would also have deep cuts. Despite a nationwide opioid addiction crisis, Trump's budget slashes by nearly 95% the funding for the Office of National Drug Control Policy. The budget calls for elimination of subsidies that helped families with low and moderate incomes afford health care under the Affordable Care Act. States would have to pay a larger share of the program, The Washington Post reports. The president also wants to slash funds for Amtrak, despite several recent train crashes with multiple fatalities. Programs that help state and local governments pay for transportation projects are also slated to be deeply cut, belying Trump's promise to improve our nation's infrastructure. A separate Trump infrastructure plan claims it would increase investment in roads and other infrastructure by $1.5 trillion over a decade, but the federal government would only provide a small fraction of that amount, leaving more than 92% unfunded. The plan offers no explanation for how cities, counties, or states could possibly make up for such a huge loss of funds, which could force them to outsource to private corporations projects such as toll roads to recoup costs. Trump did live up to one campaign pledge. His budget would eliminate 100% of federal funding for Planned Parenthood, even for non-abortion services such as birth control and women's cancer screenings. Trump calls his budget proposal a new foundation for American greatness, but there's little within it that would invest in making anything better, except for the military. The Trump administration claims the budget, if enacted, would lead to 3% economic growth. Critics contend that's unlikely, and say the president's budget ignores the growing and staggering costs of funding a federal deficit that would total more than $29 trillion. Many of the programs on the chopping block have historically enjoyed bipartisan support. It will be up to Congress to determine which of the president's budget items to support, and it's likely that Congress will make substantial changes before a final measure reaches President Trump's desk to sign.
This is Gene Carpenter with the Capitol Report. An investigative report in Politico has revealed new details on the FBI investigation of Congressman Duncan D. Hunter, as well as allegations about his behavior in Washington, D.C. According to the report, the investigation is intensifying, with Hunter's parents and a female lobbyist subpoenaed in the probe on improper spending of campaign funds. Fellow Republicans are reportedly worried about Hunter's election prospects. Politico reported earlier this month that Margaret Hunter, the congressman's wife, is now a focus of the investigation into whether campaign funds were used for personal expenses, including tuition payments for their children's private school and expensive dining, where no donor appeared to be present. She allegedly used a campaign credit card for shopping, fast food, and surf shop. Still, sources for the stories cautioned against just blaming the congressman's legal troubles on his wife. Some of the most lavish expenses occurred when the family was traveling together on vacations in Italy and Hawaii. The most salacious details in the report allege that Hunter has spent time in Washington womanizing, kept a mistress, and has been drinking heavily, possibly even on the job. Hunter did not respond to our request for comments on the allegations raised by Politico. However, he slammed the publication's claims about his personal life as tabloid trash and Washington gossip, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. While Politico does not identify the supposed mistress and allegations of the affair have not been independently verified, the publication is no tabloid. Politico has won major journalism prizes, and its reporters are regularly guests on TV news programs on major networks, including CNN and Fox. Politico interviewed multiple staffers in Hunter's office who reportedly said that a woman currently being interviewed by the FBI was promoted while frequently missing work and creating a toxic work environment. The staffers reportedly told Politico that she sometimes went with Hunter to the Capitol Hill Club, a bar frequented by Republicans. The woman's relationship with the congressman made fellow staffers question his judgment. His drinking habits were noticed as soon as he entered Congress, and he has a reputation of partying. In 2014, Washingtonian magazine named Hunter the top party animal in the House of Representatives on its best and worst of Congress listings, based on a survey of congressional staffers. Even earlier, House Speaker John Boehner asked certain House members to refrain from partying with lady lobbyists, Salon reported in 2010. Salon's articles cited the New York Post and reported the lobbyist Glenn Lemonyan, a former staffer for disgraced Congressman Tom DeLay, has been hosting after-hours house parties at his home for female lobbyists to socialize with legislators, including Congressman Duncan D. Hunter, who ran on a family values platform for his seat representing parts of San Diego and East County. According to the new report by Politico, confidants have recommended that Hunter, a combat veteran who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, check into treatment for alcoholism or get checked out for post-traumatic stress disorder. But Hunter, in statements to media, has maintained that each time he goes out, he is working. The Politico investigation details a December incident among Republicans on the House Armed Services Committee. The report claims that Hunter raised his voice at Speaker Paul Ryan and that members noticed his bloodshot eyes and slurred speech, questioning if he was drinking on the job. According to Politico, the two-year funding scandal has changed the family's circumstances. Hunter hired an auditor and paid back his campaign $60,000. He reportedly sold his house and moved with his wife and children into his parents' home. His father, Duncan Hunter Sr., the former representative of the district, moved to a second property in Texas, Politico reports. Hunter still says he will run for re-election, but his fundraising efforts are dismal, with a bulk of his donations funneled into growing legal fees. The cost of the FBI investigation has already driven him into debt. Hunter has until March 9th to file to run again. If he does seek re-election, he will be squaring off against two well-funded Democrats and several rival Republicans who have declared their intentions to run in the June primary. Should he change his mind and not file for a re-election, political insiders speculate that Republicans could seek to hang on to the seat with a last-minute candidacy filing by another prominent Republican, such as a current state senator, assemblyman, or a local mayor. Since there is no law requiring congressional candidates to live in the district they seek to represent, another possibility floated by political pundits is Congressman Daryl Issa, who has announced he is retiring from the 49th Congressional District.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Last September, the Julian Cuimaca Fire Protection District's Board of Directors voted to remain as an independent fire district, refusing to join the county fire authority run by CAL FIRE. Since then, however, the county has withdrawn all funding and support for the district, including eliminating a paramedic fire engine. Backers of a ballot measure to raise fire fees and help fund the independent district failed to get enough valid signatures for the June ballot. So now, the district's board has voted by a narrow 3-2 margin to negotiate fire protection standards for the community if the district decides to reverse its decision and opt to have the county take over responsibilities from the district after all. Many area residents who attended a crowded meeting at Fire Station 56 on Highway 79 on Wednesday believe it's the beginning of the end for the last volunteer fire department in the county. Mike Hatch, a resident of Julian since 1998 and a volunteer firefighter in the district, says this is the first step in dissolving the district. Many of those attending the meeting expected the board to vote on dissolution at Wednesday's meeting. Board President Jack Shelver explained that the body first wants to learn what level of fire protection and emergency medical services the county would commit to if the fire district is dissolved. During the meeting's public comment period, emotions often ran high. When the 15 minutes allotted for individuals to address the board ran out, many who hadn't yet had a chance to speak raised their voices in dissent. The board acquiesced, and everyone who wished to speak was granted the floor for 3 minutes. Most of those who spoke expressed support for the district to remain independent, noting that local firefighters know the geography and people of the district better than CAL FIRE crews that would replace them. Others said the district is one of economics and support a county takeover. They argued that the district needs more money to survive, and they believe the proposed tax assessments on properties in the district to keep it afloat would be too much of a financial burden on some members of the community. Many people noted the issue has at times turned ugly, with name-calling, personal attacks, and allegations of political shenanigans. Board Vice President Ada Tucker passionately responded to claims of improper communications among members of the board. She stated, "The insinuation that we are doing things illegally behind your backs is ridiculous." Supporters of an independent fire district say that they won't give up. An initiative to raise fire protection fees that failed to qualify for the June ballot will be revived in hopes of success in November's election. Firefighter Hatch says that a signature gathering effort is already being organized, and he pledges, "The battle isn't over yet." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Lemon Grove, a community that has its roots in agriculture, will soon be getting a community garden, complete with fresh organic vegetables, an adjacent flower garden, and a butterfly-friendly garden. The City Council has approved a proposal for the Lemon Grove Community Garden Group, a nonprofit organization, to plant the garden at the northeast corner of Central Avenue and Olive Street. The garden will be planted in over 50 raised beds, including 8 that will be accessible for wheelchair gardeners. Water-efficient drip irrigation will be used. The nonprofit group will lease land from the city free for 2 years, while it grows its own funding sources through grants, donations from local businesses, and community memberships. Members will be able to plant and tend their garden plots from dawn to dusk 7 days a week, but must follow certain rules, such as not growing marijuana plants. The organization also plans to partner with Thrive Lemon Grove and Lemon Grove Heal Zone to raise funds. In addition, it has support from San Diego State University's SAGE project, which provided student support last year to research how to set up a community garden for the city, among other potential civic improvements. In its report, the SAGE project stated that by providing Lemon Grove with a dedicated area for residents to get involved and grow their own produce, the city could enable its residents to develop a greater sense of community that helps foster healthier and active lifestyles. Walt Oliwa, spokesman from the Lemon Grove Community Garden Association, told council he expects the garden will be ready for its grand opening this summer. Reporting from Lemon Grove for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
East County has lost one of our region's most prominent physicians. Dr. Michael Long, a La Mesa neurologist and past president of the Grossmont Healthcare District's Board of Directors, passed away January 31st in Grossmont Hospital, where he served for nearly half a century. Dr. Long, who started his practice in La Mesa in 1967, was the founder and first president of the San Diego Neurological Society. He served as chief of staff at Grossmont Hospital in 1987. As an elected member of the Grossmont Healthcare District Board of Directors for 4 years and as medical staff executive at the hospital until his retirement in 2006, Barry Jantz, CEO of the Grossmont Healthcare District, praised Dr. Long's commitment to excellence. Dr. Long was honored for his service with the Medical Staff Distinguished Service Award in 2000 and the Grossmont Foundation Heart of Gold in 2017. He also served as counselor and treasurer of the San Diego County Medical Society and a surveyor for the California Medical Association's Institute for Medical Quality for 2 decades. He attained success despite a disadvantaged background. Born in Indiana in 1935, he was raised in a series of orphanages and foster care homes. Fortunately, a school superintendent recognized his potential, offering support and encouragement. After graduating from the Indiana University School of Medicine, Dr. Long moved to Arizona, where he completed a fellowship at St. Joseph's Hospital. Then he joined the Navy, spending 2 years at the Naval Hospital in San Diego, and attained the rank of commander. He is survived by his wife, Belle of El Cajon, as well as a daughter, son, and granddaughter. A memorial service will be held February 17th at 10 a.m. at Mount Miguel Covenant Village in Spring Valley.
In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations to the Grossmont Hospital Foundation.
Last year, visitors flocked to Anza-Borrego Desert for a superbloom, the most spectacular wildflower season in memory. But expectations are wilting for this year's wildflowers due to lack of rainfall. Other than one strong storm in January, the desert has had a drier-than-average season, so very few flowers have germinated. Since the first of the year, less than an inch of rain has fallen in Borrego Springs. While peak season for desert flowers isn't until March, seasoned wildflower watchers are predicting any more rain will likely be too little, too late. The website BorregoWildflowers.com posted on February 12th, "Germination from the rain is mostly gone because of the high temperatures and the lack of additional rain." The site notes that while there is still a chance of more rain, it would most likely be not enough and too late. The Anza-Borrego Desert State Park website states that annual wildflowers are past their peak at lower elevations in and around Borrego Springs, where in good years the desert floor is covered in a sea of blooms in late winter or early spring. But visitors can still see blooming cacti, shrubs, and trees in the park, as well as blossoming lavender. Anza-Borrego isn't the only wildflower destination having a down season. The desert wildflower site at Desert USA says only a few wildflowers have been seen at Death Valley as of mid-February, and at Antelope Valley's California Poppy Reserve, the hills are mostly brown with only sparse blooms, the Los Angeles Times reports. State officials fear a return to dry conditions after last year's wet winter broke a 5-year drought. The Sierra snowpack is far below normal. Researchers at the Central Sierra Snow Lab in Soda Springs reported the lowest water equivalent ever recorded for the February 11th date when measurements were taken, below even the drought years of 2012 through 2015. Dry weather is also impacting ski resorts in California, particularly those that offer cross-country skiing, unlike downhill runs that can create artificial snow. If February joins December and January in record-setting dryness, then California is marching into unprecedented territory, which has never been seen before in recorded climate history. Steve Johnson, long-range forecaster with Atmospherics Group International, told the Los Angeles Times, "Unless March or April bring abundant rains," he predicts, "this rainfall season could end up being one of, or possibly the driest, in our climate history." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Jonathan Getz.
And this is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting this week's Destination East County, which includes President's Day weekend activities at Lake Jennings, a jazz concert at San Pasquale Winery's tasting room in La Mesa, the Martin Luther King Community Choir in Lemon Grove, a star party and a Celtic harp concert at Mission Trails, Susico the Musical in Spring Valley, tips from La Mesa Beautiful, and hawk watching in Ramona. And Jonathan, what's coming up in March and April?
Well, for starters, Boots Ball in Borrego Springs, a St. Patrick's Day run through El Cajon, Gregory Page in concert at Mission Trails, Tomato Mania at the Water Conservation Garden, a harmonica festival and gardening in La Mesa, and Santee Lake Springtime Extravaganza. Miriam, what's happening in April?
Well, you can mark your calendars for Sweet Pea Day at Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs, the season opener of Cajon Classic Cruise Nights in El Cajon, an antique and crafts fair at Summers Past Farms, and an anniversary celebration at Heritage of the Americas Museum at Cuyamaca College. Lake Jennings in Lakeside invites you to some special President's Day weekend activities, including New Moon Fishing on Saturday, February 17th, when you can enjoy night fishing or kayaking under the stars up until 10 p.m. Be sure to bring a lantern. The lake will be stocked before the weekend with 1,500 pounds of rainbow trout, and you can also catch bass, bluegill, and other fish, and that's no fish story, folks. On President's Day, that's Monday, February 19th, the lake will be open from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. for those wishing to enjoy a picnic, fish from the shoreline, or rent a boat, and campsites are also available on President's Day weekend. Is it true George Washington's sleeping there?
Yes, they got a time machine and brought him back.
That sounds pretty good. Just kidding, folks, although you can have fun anyway. For information and reservations, you can visit lakejennings.org.
San Pascual Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa's downtown village will host live music by Stage 4 Jazz on February 17th at 7 p.m. Stage 4 Jazz is a dynamic group with a repertoire that spans jazz, rhythm and blues, and more. Learn more at sanpascualwinery.com.
And speaking of music, the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Choir from San Diego will perform gospel and inspirational songs at the Lemon Grove Library on Saturday, February 17th at 2 p.m. The choir's music celebrates the history of Negro spirituals, aspiring to be inspirational and uplifting. For more information, you can visit the musical group's website at mlkccsd.org.
And, looking up at the sky, view the Andromeda Galaxy, the Orion Nebula, and other celestial sights during a star party at Mission Trails Regional Park on Saturday, February 17th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Amateur astronomer and trail guide George Varga will have a telescope available for viewing the night sky at the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day-use parking lot. Learn more at mtrp.org.
And you can get in the mood for some Irish music a little early before St. Patrick's Day with a Celtic harp concert on February 18th at Mission Trails, performed by Amy Lynn Canner. The concert will be in the Park Visitor Center Auditorium on February 18th at 3 p.m. It will feature Paco Bell's Canon, Debussy's Clair de Lune, plus popular music like Stairway to Heaven and more on that Celtic harp. For details and directions, you can visit mtrp.org, the Mission Trails Regional Park website.
And for all of you gardeners, learn tips for attracting pollinators such as bees, hummingbirds, and butterflies to your garden at La Mesa Beautiful's annual meeting on February 18th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Nancoots Cottage, 5045 Memorial Drive, La Mesa. Marcia Van Looy, a volunteer with the Master Gardener Association for 17 years, will be the speaker. Growing plants for all types of pollinators in her hillside garden is one of Loy's favorite subjects to share with others. Her garden is a certified wildlife habitat and a certified earth-friendly garden. The program is open to the public, and refreshments will be served. Please RSVP LaMesaBeautiful at gmail.com.
For everyone who has ever loved reading Dr. Seuss books in their childhood, Young Actors Theater will be presenting Seussical the Musical at the Encore Theater in the Casa de Oro area of Spring Valley from February 22nd through March 4th. This musical production brings to life all of your favorite Dr. Seuss characters from the Cat in the Hat to Horton the Elephant. For tickets, you can visit yatsandiego.org, as in Young Actors Theater.
The Wildlife Research Institute invites you to Hawk Watch. Each Saturday in February at 10 a.m., visitors can see birds of prey, such as hawks, eagles, and owls. Sponsored by the Wildlife Research Institute, this year, Hawk Watch will be held at Beechant Ranch, a private ranch open only for the Hawk Watch events. Guests are advised to arrive a half hour early for parking, bring binoculars, and enjoy coffee and donuts before viewing the raptors that make their homes in the Ramona grasslands. For more information, you can visit wildlife-research.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
You're invited to don your desert dressy attire and finest hiking boots for the second annual Boots Ball, hosted by the Anza Borrego Foundation on Saturday, March 3rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. Guests will enjoy musical entertainment, food, live and silent auctions, and learn about the Foundation's vision for the next 50 years. The guest speaker, Obi Kaufman, is a poet, artist, and advocate for wilderness conservation. The Boots Ball will be held at the Anza Borrego Desert Research Center in Borrego Springs. For tickets and registration for the Boots Ball fundraiser, visit the Anza Borrego Foundation's website at theabf.org.
Gregory Page, an international touring and recording artist, returns to Mission Trails Regional Park Auditorium for a concert on Sunday, March 4th at 3 p.m. This London-born Irish-American citizen of the world has imagination and conscience as well as vocal talent. He'll be sharing his stunning guitar work, songs of peace, ballads of what he calls optimistic melancholy, and in his words, true stories that he makes up, with the Mission Trails listening audience and performance for the whole family. For details, you can visit Mission Trails Regional Park at mtrp.org.
And the same day, March 4th, Run East County invites you to take part in the annual St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon, 5K race, and Green Mile through downtown El Cajon. There's also a Tribes and Clans CrossFit competition, a Tribes and Clans for Kids event, and a beer garden. Participants are encouraged to wear green and participate in a costume contest as you join avid runners and walkers for a morning of fun, all to benefit local East County charities. To register for the St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon race or other events, you can visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
That sounds fun, Jonathan. I think you should wear your leprechaun costume and join in the fun.
I actually have green pants and a green shirt. I don't know if they're the same color green, but I could figure something
you
out.
You could pull it off. Tomato Mania is returning March 10th and 11th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College. This famous weekend-long sale features heirloom and hybrid tomato seedlings of every size, shape, color, and taste profile, from Romas and beefsteaks to stripes, believe it or not. Planting tomatoes marks the beginning of spring for gardeners, and who can't resist the fresh taste of a garden-grown tomato? You can get expert advice, pick up tools for gardening, attend classes, and take a tour of the garden, too. Plus, visitors can, of course, savor some time-honored tomato refreshments. Find more delicious details at thegarden.org.
And speaking of springs, Santee Lakes and the City of Santee invite you to a spring extravaganza on Sunday, March 25th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event includes continuous egg hunts for children age 8 and under, as well as carnival rides, crafts, face painting, pony rides, photos with the Easter Bunny, and more. Tickets are required for some activities. For details, visit santeelakes.com.
And yet another springtime event. Harmonica players from far and wide will participate in the 9th Annual Spring Harp Fest on Saturday, March 31st, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa. The lineup of top players and a harmonica jam fest at the event all help to benefit music programs in local schools. You can also shop for harmonicas and other musical items at this event. For details, visit springharpfest.org.
And looking ahead to April, Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs, just east of El Cajon, invites you to Sweet Pea Day on Saturday, April 14th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visit a towering sweet pea maze at this event, celebrating the fragrant, old-fashioned flowers in their full glory. You can preview the maze from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. and cut your own bouquet starting at 11 a.m. until they are gone, which doesn't take long. Guests can also enjoy live music with Jin Earp on a shady pavilion, savor snacks at an outdoor coffee bar, or picnic on the grass to round out an idyllic spring day. For more information, you can visit summerspastfarms.com.
And I've actually been to that Sweet Pea Day Festival in the past, and I think I got the very last bouquet. People were lined up around the place waiting to get in with their clippers and clip their bouquets.
That sounds like so much fun. What else is going on April 14th?
Well, that's the grand opening of Cajon Classic Cruise season. They'll be revving up for the season opener on Wednesday, April 14th from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. Thousands of people from across the region come to Cajon Classic Cruise Nights each Wednesday, which will continue all summer long. In addition to viewing classic vehicles with a different theme each week, visitors can enjoy musical entertainment at Prescott Promenade on Main Street, that's just east of Magnolia, or arrive early to dine at an outdoor cafe to stake out your roadside view of the Cajon Classic Cruise. If you want more information, you can go to downtownelcajon.com.
An antiques and crafts fair will be held at Summers Pass Farms in Flynn Springs on Saturday, April 21st and Sunday, April 22nd from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can view works by over 70 craftsmen and artisans while shopping for crafts, collectibles, antiques, and garden items. Find details at summerspastfarms.com.
And last but not least, Heritage of the Americas Museum is celebrating its 25th anniversary with a special event on Saturday, April 14th from 5 to 7 p.m., featuring guest artist Alfredo Rodriguez. The celebration also features a catered buffet, music, auction, drinks, and good times. For more information, visit heritageoftheamericasmuseum.com.
And that's at Cuyamaca College, right?
Yes, it is, right next to the Water Conservation Garden, so you can always stop by and visit both in one day. They're both wonderful locations.
Well, that's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, your independent public radio station.
This is Liz Albert with an Olympics recap. On Wednesday, Sean White made clear one thing. He's here and here to say. And like his teammate Chloe Kim, he's here to make history. He's here to make sure people remember his name. The 31-year-old San Diego native, who graduated from Torrey Pines High School like his mentor, skateboarding legend Tony Hawk, won gold in the men's snowboarding halfpipe final on Wednesday after two almost perfect qualifying runs on Tuesday. But if you're an athlete, you know that almost perfect isn't perfect. So what does Sean do? He goes into the final round and tallies a 97.75. That's higher than Chloe Kim and, more importantly, earned him his third Olympic winter gold in his fourth Olympic winter games. But he had competition. 19-year-old Japanese phenom Ayumu Hirano posted a 95.25 on his second run. Australian Scotty James posted a 92 on his first run. Speaking of 19-year-olds, the average age of White's competitors, 21.9, all going up against a 31-year-old. That takes some guts. White is now the only snowboarder to ever win three gold medals and Olympics after being hurt at the Sochi Games 4 years ago. And it wouldn't be a Sean White medaling without the medal being medal number 100 for Team USA in Olympic history. In other Olympic news, Team USA men's hockey sustained a crushing overtime loss to Slovenia.
This is KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, your independent public radio station.
This is Liz Albert with an Olympics recap. The U.S. captured the bronze medal in the team figure skating event, which included the strong international field of competitors in men's and women's singles, pair skating, and ice dancing. Chris Knierim, a former Ramona resident, with his wife and pair skating partner Alessa Simica Knierim, took fourth place in both their short and long programs. The pair skated a nearly flawless short program, including a quadruple twist, and despite bobbles in the long program, performed strong enough to help the U.S. win the third-place bronze. Canada took the gold medal in first place, and Russian skaters got the silver medal in the team competition. Individual skating competitions remain upcoming at the Pyeongchang, South Korea 2018 Winter Olympics. U.S. team member Mirai Nagasu became the first American female skater to land a triple axel at the Olympics and only the third in history to do so after two Japanese skaters in the past. She finished second in her long program after Russian competitor Elena Zakatova, who also gave a breathtaking performance with superior artistry. In the women's short program, Brady Tennell represented the U.S. and skated a clean and elegant program, including the triple-lutz, triple-toe combination, but placed fifth among an exceptionally strong field of women competitors. Adam Rippon, in his Olympic debut, skated a clean artistic program, his jubilation evident. He is the first openly gay U.S. figure skating competitor and took third in the lawn program of the team event. By contrast, Nathan Chen, who represented the U.S. in the short program, botched major moves but did land a quadruple-double combination jump. High hopes have been pinned on Chen to recoup before the individual competitions, however, since he landed 5 quadruple jumps at the U.S. National Championships, the first ever to do so. Maya and Alexa Shibutani, a brother-sister ice dancing team representing the U.S., gave an exuberant performance to place second in the lawn program, helping propel the U.S. to bronze. Individual skating competitions are being held this week, which can be viewed on NBC, NBCSN, or online at NBCOlympics.com.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
The sheriff is asking public help to locate a man in a pickup truck who tried to kidnap a woman on Valentine's Day morning at her mailbox on State Route 79 in Warner Springs. The victim, who is 29 years old, told deputies she was getting out of her car to get her mail when a man attacked her and tried to get her into his truck. She was able to fight off the attacker and drive away from the area, but the man followed her from the scene for some distance and then continued driving westbound on State Route 76 towards Valley Center. The woman suffered minor injuries and was treated at a hospital and then released, says Sergeant Brian Jenkins. She describes the suspect as a white man between 30 and 40 years old, about 5 feet 9 inches tall, weighing 180 pounds, with dark eyes, a strong body odor, and rotting missing teeth. She says the man was wearing a black beanie, a black jacket, gray shirt, dark pants, and black shoes. He was last seen driving a late 90s model pickup truck that was possibly a Ford Ranger. Anyone with information on this case is asked to call Deputy Alvin Vasquez at area code 760-782-3353. You can also call the Crime Stoppers Anonymous tip line at 888-580-8477, and you could be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for information leading to an arrest. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Paul Cruz with a Crime Beat Report. A man in a vehicle parked outside Parkway Plaza shopping mall in El Cajon reportedly exposed himself to a 14-year-old girl on Tuesday in broad daylight. The girl was seated in a car waiting for her mother to get off work at the Home Goods store. The girl's mother, Alexis Napier, told 10 News that the man put his legs on the dashboard and spread them apart while staring at her daughter. The man wore only a red t-shirt and sheer black nylon tights. The girl told her mother that the man got out of the car and started doing stretches, thrusting his hips forward. He also walked around and bent over and exposed his genitals and rump. The teenager put a blanket up to block the unwanted view. When the mother came out of the store, the man took off in his vehicle. The mother called 911 and followed the suspect a short distance to get his license plate number. Police are reportedly investigating. Posts on the Mount Helix Next Door forum indicate the flasher is a white man in his 30s or 40s driving a burgundy Ford Edge with Mickey Mouse stickers on it. Anyone with information on this incident should contact the El Cajon Police Department.
The El Cajon Police Department is seeking witnesses to identify the driver who hit and fatally injured a woman pedestrian found still alive at 4:30 in the morning on Thursday in the 1000 block of South Sunshine Avenue in El Cajon. She died while being transported to a hospital. The woman may have been homeless and has not yet been identified, according to Lieutenant Royal Bates, though they are hopeful that fingerprints will help the coroner in identifying who she was. It is unknown when the accident occurred exactly. Police have been searching the area for damaged vehicles, and anyone with information is asked to please call the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311. It's unknown who was at fault in causing the pre-dawn collision. However, it is a crime to flee the scene of a crash, regardless of who was at fault. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them. They get bees in them. They get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them, because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers. And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine. I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now that's what I would call an obliging plant. Another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password? Zauschnerias, or Epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant, and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, my friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife-attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular-shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy-type flowers, that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies, it also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden. Not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting-looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report.
Most people don't set up a wholesale pastured poultry operation in an area known for mountain lion activity, but for farmer Paul Grieve of Pasture Bird in Warner Springs, flourishing habitat is an integral part of farming. He says, "The important thing to us is that we build an ecosystem. Our role is to steward the land and grow a great environment for Mother Nature." The farm started from the family's search for healthy food for its own use, and today its practices have made it a regional model. Pasture Bird and its sister location, Primal Pastures, recently became Southern California's first farms to achieve certified wildlife-friendly status, which recognizes farms and ranches committed to regenerative practices that enable wildlife and livestock to coexist. Pasture Bird is now working to restore perennial grasslands. It uses managed multi-species grazing practices to improve soil. It conserves wildlife corridors and relies on humane practices to deter predators like mountain lions. It's all part of a progressive wave of agriculture that models the critical role of farms and ranches in sustaining wildlife and habitat. Grieve and his family are restoring a former potato field to permanent pasture. This ensures that wildlife corridors remain open and protects their chickens in ways that allow wildlife to pass through the property. That includes coyotes, deer, snakes, rabbits, birds, and, yes, mountain lions. Grieve says that seeing these animals on his farm means we're doing something right. Livestock guardian dogs are integral to the farm's ability to coexist with wildlife. While predator losses were significant in the farm's first true commercial year, today the farm raises its own dogs, a mix of Anatolian Shepherds and Great Pyrenees, to protect the flock, which is moved to fresh pasture daily in open-air, floorless chicken tractors. Primal Pastures, which sells directly to consumers, and Pasture Bird, a wholesaler, raise chickens without antibiotics. They use sunshine, fresh air, and open space to prevent diseases. The chickens eat a natural diet of bugs and worms, and chicken waste helps restore soils and pastures. The farm envisions having its operation become carbon neutral in a few years by offsetting energy used by tractors and other equipment through soil-building activities. The farm's efforts have been noticed by the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Lakers teams, both of which have accounts. So does Chef Alan Latourelle of Wolfgang Puck, who recently sent staff to tour the farm. He says Pastureland's commitment to raising chickens the way they were meant to live is truly inspiring. Winston Vickers, a veterinarian with the Southern California Mountain Lion Project, states, "I am thrilled that Paul and his team are leading the way in the region by taking measures to not only protect their chickens and raise healthier ones, but simultaneously helping to keep wildlife populations and the ecosystems healthy." The mountain lion expert adds, "I applaud their foresight and leadership and urge others to follow their great example." You can learn more about these sustainable poultry operations at pasturebird.com and primalpastures.com. For more information on how you can become a certified wildlife-friendly farm or ranch, you can visit wildlifefriendly.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.